Right, welcome in, welcome back. That's a little, that is old school. That's the original song that I started playing when I started doing this. And I thought people would get sick of it, and they aren't. And people have actually requested I go back to the old school Dr. Dre electric Let's Get High beat. So there it is. For those of you who requested it, you got it. While it is kind of fun playing DJ and mixing in some different stuff, I have no problem with that. That's old school. I love that. So welcome in. Welcome back. This is becoming a more regular thing. We're getting ramped up here. And I got a bunch of ideas for shows. So we're going to rip off a string of them now, even though spring football is over. So thank you for joining me. Let's do the propers. As always, you can find me at Always Irish on YouTube, obviously. Type in Twitter, Always Irish, you'll find me, or at JKZND4, you could find me there as well. As you know by now, this show is put on and sponsored by the Michigan Sports and Entertainment Network, which is an ever-growing website with different podcasts shooting to everything. I'm talking sports, I'm talking music, entertainment, lifestyle, living, life advice. Like they go all over the board, and so it's cool to be in such a diverse network. So check them out when you get a chance. These episodes are being uploaded to Facebook. I was reminded by my good friend Lawrence that I neglected to mention that when I did a show last week. I'm sorry, I'm knocking off the rust. Give me a break. But I forgot to mention that. So these are going to be posted to the Always Irish page on Facebook. And I've been off Facebook for a long time, like college. I'm talking like 15 years. Getting back on now, it's a totally different world. I got to relearn how to use it because nothing's the same. So like, subscribe, share, thumbs up, thumbs down. Tell me I'm stupid. Put dumb things in the comment section. I don't care what you do. I just like the interaction, okay? And so the other thing I wanted to update you guys on is iTunes is very close to getting there and being up and running. A lot of people have asked me about iTunes. It's the next thing I'm working on. I got it all, I think, figured out how we're going to do it. And so I will officially announce and let you know when iTunes is a go. I know that is a preferred destination for a lot of people. And so we're going to have that and Google Play and Stitcher and all that other stuff. It's all coming. And I will keep you posted on that. Trust me. Okay, so before we get started today, I want to say thank you to everybody who commented after the last video. It's about time. We missed you. I needed this. You know, it's not the same without these shows. I appreciate that. I don't know what it says about you. If you're that guy that's like, you know what I really need? I need John to scream about the Georgia game in May. I don't know what that says about you that you enjoy that, but I enjoy that you enjoy that. So keep encouraging me to go off the rails and I'll probably do it for you. So I do appreciate everybody who was excited that we were back. So here's what we're going to do today. This is very, very, very simple, straightforward, probably isn't even going to be an hour. We only have two things to go over today. Here's what they are. Number one, I'm going to go through these position groups post-spring, post-blue and gold. And I want to just kind of give some general thoughts about the position group, whether it be individual players or that group, the group in totality, and any specifics within these groups that I want to point out, just things that are coming to my mind about these groups. That's one part of it. But the other thing I'm going to do for each of these groupings is I am going to say whether I think I feel better, worse, or the same about each of these groups after the spring game, like say compared to the offseason or just after Clemson, or maybe you could even say after we knew who was going to go pro or not. And I think that's probably a better marking point is how do I feel about these groups now compared to how I felt after we saw who was leaving? And so that's kind of going to be the first big thing we're going to do today. And then we're going to introduce my segment at my new segment at the end, just called Always Annoyed. Here's the deal with the Always Annoyed segment. All it's going to be is a really short little snippet of something that annoys me in everyday life. That's it. There's not a lot of thought put into this. This is not me trying to cure cancer or figure out why we all can't get along politically. It isn't going to be that. This is going to be maybe just little petty annoyances in life, little things I got a problem with that you might too. So just really kind of lighthearted, funny, sometimes immature, often petty, just little annoyances in my life that I just think it'd be fun to rant on for a minute. So that's the Always Annoyed segment, and we're going to do the first one today. Okay, so let's get this started right away. I'm just going to start at offense and just move down these position groupings, and we're just going to go over it. Let's start with the quarterback. And where am I at with this group overall? I am lower on this group overall than I was right after the season ended or even after we knew who was leaving or whatever. I'm a little lower on it. And let me tell you why is it has very little to do with Ian Book and more to do with Phil. And what I perceive to be not enough growth at this point in the program for Phil. I thought he was going to be further along. All I hear about is how athletic, what a freak athlete he is. And this powerful rocket arm and all this stuff. And when he first came in here, he was the future and all this. He was that quarterback that we've been missing and asking for. And by this point, I wanted him to challenge Book. And I wanted it to be this known commodity in Book who's smart and accurate and these intermediate throws and he leads the country in accuracy, all that stuff that you can rely on. But I wanted Phil to tantalize us with what you see from the Clemson kid. I'm not trying to compare him to the Slim Reaper down at Clemson. That's what I call him, the Slim Reaper. And I'm not saying he's that guy. I'm not trying to make that comparison. But I mean a kid with that big monster arm that people have to be afraid of, a kid that's just way more naturally athletic, athletically gifted than Ian Book is. And from what he was built up to us as a recruit and then early in the program, I expected him to challenge Ian Book by now. And for the staff to have to make a decision between the known commodity in Book and what you know you're going to get versus the big upside of Phil. I wanted Phil to have to make them make that tough decision. And it just doesn't seem like he's there, and it seems like he's regressed in some ways. And I have a hard time with that. You know, But here's the thing. I don't know if I could blame Phil for that. I'm not saying Phil's not doing what he needs to do to get better and get in the mix here in this competition. But when I hear reports from my friends that are at practice or have access to practice, and they tell me that Brian Kelly's been messing with Phil's delivery and making him uncertain about his throwing motion, I don't like that. I don't like that. You already know my feelings on Brian Kelly and quarterbacks. Name the one Brian Kelly quarterback from Notre Dame who's gone to the NFL and done good. You can't because there are none. And name the Notre Dame quarterback who's gotten better the longer in their program under Brian Kelly. Can't name one because there ain't one. So I already have problems with Brian Kelly and quarterbacks and why they don't just on a chart, on a graph, get the why is the arrow not up? Every year, quarterbacks in the system, they should get better. They should get more comfortable. They should just be able to intuit the game better, understand their reads quicker, understand where pressure's coming from, not get confused from mixed fronts and moving guys in and out from the defense. Like, all this stuff should indicate your quarterback should get better the longer they're in the system. We don't see that arc. We don't see that upwards clear arrow from Brian Kelly Notre Dame quarterbacks. We really don't. And that's upsetting. That's not how it should be. And especially when I see true freshman quarterbacks winning championships like what just happened at Clemson. That makes it hard for me to believe. You can't just say, oh, these young kids, you can't throw them in there and they play early. Well, yeah, they can if they're coached right and they're good enough. Yes, they can. So maybe that's not our situation, but don't tell me it can't be done because it just happened for a ring, for a title. So it's possible. It happens. And I even read an article that was posted the other day. Could Brendan Clark be the backup to Ian Book? So now we're talking about a kid younger than Phil taking his spot being second. I got a problem with this. I have a problem with this. And it isn't just the blue and gold game. And you could throw that out if you want, just because it's such a weird arrangement and situation. So disregard that if you wish. I just personally thought and expected Phil to be challenging Ian Book and tantalizing the coaching staff and us with this huge arm, greater athleticism, more mobility than Ian Book. That's what I thought we were getting. And I'm not seeing that development. And it's very frustrating. It just is. And now I'm in a situation where I don't know what happens if Ian Book gets banged up in the ribs again and we have to go to a backup. This isn't Brandon Wimbush where at least you know what you're going to get. He's played a bunch of games, you know, whatever. I don't know what's going to happen now. But I just think he should be to the point where he's challenging Ian Book. And he's not, and it's concerning to me. And so for that reason, I feel a little less encouraged than I did because I really did think that there would be a competition here this spring between the big arm and the known commodity and see what happens. And we're just not seeing it. So I don't know why we're not seeing it, so that concerns me. But so that's Phil. Let's talk about Ian Book specifically. We did a little bit in the last show, but I think that you saw in the Clemson game the downside to having a guy like Ian Book. It was the perfect example. You saw how having this ultra efficient, but not ultra athletic and ultra arm guy, you saw that it was good enough to win 12 games, which is awesome. And then you saw the limitations when you go up against a truly great team. You need a great quarterback to win in those situations. That's what I think I learned from the Book Clemson experience. And that's another reason I was hoping we'd have this competition, because I saw the limitations in Book. They challenged him deep. He couldn't do it. And they ate. And Clemson ate all day. And so I do think we are going to see, I hope, Ian Book break this trend of Brian Kelly quarterbacks who plateau or regress the longer they're in the system. I think Ian Book might break that trend just because I trust that Ian Book has the mental capacity and temperament to be able to just get a little better. He's a smart kid. And so I just think he's going to get a little better in terms of recognition, in terms of knowing what's coming a little more, knowing where getting through his progressions quicker. Like Ian Book's so smart that I think he's going to be better just because of that. But that's a mental part of the game. What I don't know is if you don't have a naturally big arm and you're not naturally accurate on long throws, how can you get better? How can you get better at that over one spring? That's what worries me. I'm still worried we're not going to be able to take deep shots and make a defense stay honest because they're going to say this kid can't throw it that far. And if he does, it's not that accurate. And so that's the piece that I want to see. Like, I know Chip's been talking about being more aggressive. We need to put up more points. We need to do all this stuff. Well, this needs to be a part of it. It starts and ends with the quarterback. So I don't really know how you, in one spring session, suddenly you could throw the ball 60 yards through the air. Like, I don't quite understand how that's going to just happen. But taking more shots down the field and hitting them and making a defense have to honor that is going to be key. So I think, Ian Book, you're going to get what we've seen, this ultra-efficient type thing. Tuck it and run for the first down when you need to. All that stuff we like about Ian Book, I expect to continue. A big part of how far and how electric this offense can become totally has to do with if he's evolved to the point where he could do more downfield and make people stay honest. But if he takes a helmet to the ribs and you got to rely on the backup, that makes me very, very, very nervous because I just haven't seen enough from Phil to make me comfortable at all. And so that's kind of where I'm at with quarterback. Okay, let's move on to the running back position. This is one that I will honestly say I feel a little better about now than I did after the Clemson game and knowing we were going to lose Dexter and all that kind of stuff. I actually do feel a little better about it. I liked what I saw in the spring. I liked flashes of what I saw in the blue and gold game as well. I mean, obviously they're going to run. Here's the thing. With Jafar and Tony Jones and Jameer Smith and Sebo Flemister, I don't think you have that extra playmaking gear that you got from Dexter Williams. And I think it's going to show. I think Dexter bailed this offense out of a lot of really, really bad situations totally on his own, where they handed the ball to him and he made his own. He changed the game on his own. He did it with his first carry against Stanford at home when the game was still in doubt against Virginia Tech and we were backed up on the 1 yard line. He ran it all the way, made one jump, one cut, and ran through and by everybody and changed the entire game. Okay. We take for granted what he did and how his unique extra step and burst got him those yards and those holes that I don't know if they're going to be there this year. Okay. But I feel better about this group than I did. I was really nervous about it. Jafar's going to be your main guy, I believe. And then you got Tony Jones and Jameer Smith and Sebo. And what's the order going to be? And who exactly is in there to do what? I don't know. But here's where I want to go with this running back discussion. If you want to go with Jafar, and apparently he's one of the hardest workers on the team, he keeps looking better. Okay, fine. I get that. And he's a guy with some experience, so I totally understand that. But I'm telling you right now, Kyren Williams needs to get a chance to make an impact on this team this year. He is the next guy that I think has that playmaking ability. I don't know if it's sit to the point of Dexter, but of all these guys in this position grouping, Kyren Williams is the next guy that I think has the ability to break a game wide open on his own. And so I am all for finding a way to get this kid involved. I don't care if he's young. Too many times Brian Kelly defers to upperclassmen. I want to defer to talent. I want to defer to talent. Kyren Williams is that next guy. They need to find a way to give him chances to break open games. Okay? They just do. And so I think there's more good options here than I did, you know, after the season last year and knowing we were going to lose Dexter. I do. I think there's some serviceable backs here. But I want playmakers. I want a guy who can make a cut and outrun some Georgia defenders. The only guy on this list I think can do it's Kyren Williams. Will he get the chance that early in the year? I don't know. Brian Kelly's history tends to indicate no. But I'm telling you guys, he's the guy out of this group that has that playmaking ability. I really hope they give him a chance. I just don't know if it's going to happen. That being said, I feel more comfortable that more of these guys are serviceable, whether the first game depth chart is Jafar, Tony, Jameer. I don't know what this three deep's going to be. I don't know if they're going to rotate. I don't know how it's going to go. But I just think that Kyren Williams is the future, and he has that extra spark that I don't see from the rest of these guys that is going to be sorely missed with Dexter Williams gone. So keep an eye out for that. See if they give this kid a chance to make plays. I'm nervous that they're not going to, but I hope I'm just because he's so young. But I hope I'm wrong. And running back's one of those positions where I'm not, this is like the Dexter thing. I'm not putting him in there to have to be a perfect blocker, and people are using that as a reason to not play Dexter. Was because he wasn't a best blocker. I want to hand the ball to a kid and let him boat race everybody for 7 points. That's what I'm looking for. Kid who can change a game for you in one play. Hand the freshman a ball and see if he can make a move. I'm not asking for Kyren Williams to come in being the three down back every series. I'm not asking for that. I just recognize that extra spark and juice when I see it. And that's what I see from this kid. And I want a kid like that to have a chance early to play. And then what would happen if a freshman ended up being really good? That means you get him for 2 or 3 more years. You're not waiting till a kid's a junior or a senior to play him. You might get that kid's luxury of playing him for 3 years or maybe even 4. We got to start finding these younger kids that could play and be difference makers for all these years, not just the last one in the system. Okay, let's move on to the receiver grouping. And I have to say, some of you people aren't even going to believe this because I'm notoriously the glass half empty Notre Dame guy. And you all know that if you're regular listeners. But here's the deal with receiver. I was I was concerned once we knew Boykin was going to leave. I looked at that as kind of a big hit. However, and I still think it's a big hit. However, I feel way more encouraged with what we have coming in this fall and what we're going to have than I did right after that decision was made and I just looked at these names. I think I am very excited about this group. I think if they are used properly, that's a big if, by the way. If this group is utilized properly and is aligned with the quarterback getting better, having another year under the system, and with an offensive line that should continue to develop, and we will get to them in a little bit, this wide receiver group has a chance to be electric. They have a chance to put up a ton of yards, a ton of points, a ton of yak. They could be very, very exciting. They have to be used the right way, though. They have to be used the right way for that to happen. And so what I kind of see here is, I don't see Michael Floyd or Golden Tate, okay? But I think they're about 7 or 8 deep where I like the talent. And I think that that matters, and I think it's one of the deepest Notre Dame receiving corps I can remember. But they have to be used right for this to matter. And so let's start here. Claypool needs to be the leader in this group, and it seems like he has stepped up in the spring from all accounts and has indeed become that. Okay, so Chase Claypool needs to become your leader and like your go-to, you know, your go-to guy for any, you know what I'm saying. Anytime you need something, you need that out on 3rd and 7, you need something to go and get it, you're going to go to Claypool, okay, like we did Boykin. That's Claypool's role now. And I think he's going to do a good job in that role. So I like that. He could be the established leader, the guy who's proven himself on the field, the guy who's been there before, your go-to reception type guy. Fine. Then you have Chris Finck. And everybody loves what Chris Finck offers. You know you're getting that reliability, that durability. You know if it's anywhere near him, he's going to catch it. You know that he's going to just going to be slippery enough to get those extra yards that we need for that first down. And so I like that you know what you're going to get from your two upperclassmen, proven, established leaders. Those are known commodities that teams are going to have to account for. So having those guys is just like having money and gold in the bank. I know I can rely on them. I know what I'm going to get from them. And they should continue to evolve as they're in the system. What really, really, really excites me is the speed and athleticism of the guys underneath them. Not only does it excite me because of their potential, it also excites me because I think there's an opportunity to sneak up on some teams because there's not going to be a lot of film or information on these younger players. This is another reason that I hope Louisville and New Mexico are really, really bland, boring game plans by Notre Dame. It should not take that much of our playbook to beat those two teams. I want us to shape the beginning of this season for Georgia being the Super Bowl and the entire year, because I think it is. So I want us to keep things in our pocket and then unleash these kids against Georgia. That's what I want us to do. That's what I think we should do. I don't think we need to show everything we want to do against Louisville and New Mexico before Georgia. I want to see Lawrence Keys out in crossing patterns in open space. I want to see that. I want to see Michael Young out in space, able to catch the ball and make moves. I've been asking for Braden Lindsey to get a chance to show his speed. I want to see it. That also goes for Kevin Austin. I'm waiting for Kevin Austin to break out. I thought we were beginning to see that occur last year, and then we had some problems, and then he kind of dropped off. And then he had some other issues. I think there were some classroom issues being talked about, and he had some struggles. But when you have these two great knowns in Claypool and Finck, and then you add in Kevin Austin's speed, Lawrence Key's speed, Michael Young's speed, Braden Lindsey, I want these guys crisscrossing, flip-flopping, confusing defenses, running all over the middle of the field. Do these pick plays with each other every time because they're not going to call it every time. How many of these do I not see called? And it just sticks the dagger in my heart of that Florida State game, how they did that to us and screwed us down in Tallahassee. Can't believe it. I'm still not over it. I'll never get over it. But it's a great blend here because you have these known commodity reception guys in Claypool and Finck. And then I just look at these other guys as just these little pain in the ass speed demons, just crisscrossing and causing all this confusion, and get them the ball in open space and let them run. That's what I want to see. And all we've been hearing from Chip is that this offense needs to expand. It needs to be more explosive. We need more yak. We need more big chunk plays. We left all these points on the field. I keep hearing that from Chip. So I think he understands it. But can he get to the point where I actually see it happen? And so I am very, very excited about this group. I think they can be electric. And I think it can be really fun to watch. Only if they're used right. So that's where I'm at on the receivers. I am super excited. That might be the group I'm most excited to see. And I think you're going to see some young guys really step up and break out this year. And I'm here for it. Give me that yak. Give me that yak. Instead of throwing a lame fade pattern 8 yards to the out-of-bounds line to get a first down, I want to see some moves. I want to see some yardage after the damn catch. That's modern offense. I want to see it. I need to see it. Give it to me. Moving on to the tight ends. I know the tight end position, it frustrates me. You know, we have this big lineage of all these great, you know, tight ends and Tyler Eifert and Kyle Rudolph and all this stuff. And I just, quite frankly, I need to see more from the tight ends. I've been disappointed in their production the last few years. You cannot state enough what a amazing, awesome weapon it is when you have that tight end who's running wide open down the seam. And it's one more guy they have to account for receiving. It opens everything else up. And also a tight end who can receive and get open is the best safety valve any quarterback can have. Third and five, and the guy just kind of rolls off the line and they dump it off to him. He gets a first down. Stuff like that. And so everybody's excited about Cole Kmet taking that next step and Brock Wright too. But from what I can gather and from what I've read and seen, it really seems like Tommy Tremble might be the best one in this group after it's all said and done. You're going to end up in another situation, though, where how much does a younger kid than the other two guys get to see the field and play? And how much of this has to do with their blocking? That's the other thing with these tight ends. That's a part of the job. I understand it. I just wish you had an offensive line strong enough that you don't need the guy to stay in a block often. And then he could go out and be another receiving weapon and spread out the defense for you. It's frustrating to me when it's like you need an extra offensive lineman. You don't trust your line. You got to give somebody help and keep that tight end in. That it's taking a receiver off the field, and I hate it. Okay? So I need to see this group do more. And so I guess I feel the same about them as I did after, where I'm kind of frustrated and annoyed and waiting to see who's going to emerge as that weapon. Now, the other part of this is maybe I'm putting the blame on the wrong group. Maybe I should be frustrated with the offensive line that the staff feels they got to keep a tight end in to help chip and block. So maybe that's on them. All I know is those Notre Dame offenses where we had a tight end that could get open down the field were super exciting to watch, super fun to watch, and having that weapon open up everything else, and we need to get back to it. If this offense is going to be exciting like I hope it is, the tight end running patterns has to be a key part of the offense, not a once or twice a game. I want a tight end that could catch 5 or 6 passes for 70 or 80 yards. We need to see that again. Notre Dame still talks about tight end U. Well, I've been disappointed. So I have to see us get back to that level. And again, this is something the staff has talked about, but I have to see it in games and not against Louisville, New Mexico. I have to see it when it matters. Do it against Georgia. Have that tight end running down the seam wide open. Okay, and hit him. And so that's where I'm at tight ends. I'm a little frustrated. I feel like the production has just tanked big time the last handful of years from this spot. And I don't like it. Notre Dame offenses under Brian Kelly are much better with that tight end as a receiving threat. So I don't know whether the offensive line needs to get better, so that they don't feel they need that guy in there to block, or the tight ends just need to be more consistent in practice or to earn that. I don't know. I just know I got to see more this year. And I think I saw some of that in the spring and some of that in the spring game. I got to see more of it. And we just, that's just something we need to see if this offense is going to take the next step. It's that simple. But there are a lot of people who think the young kid, Tommy Tremble, could be the best and most athletic out of this entire group. He's just young. And so we're just going to have to see how that evolves as we move along. Now, let's talk about the offensive line. Now, here's the challenge with analyzing the offensive line is it's so much different of a position group than many others. Like, think about it. We were just talking about receivers. Well, if one receiver doesn't get open on a route, the quarterback could throw to somebody else who does, and it doesn't ruin the whole play because one guy couldn't get open and do their job. There's still options. The play can still be a success. Offensive line is much different. Four out of five could do their job. One guy doesn't. Boom. Whole play's ruined. Sack. Lost. You know, everything goes down the crapper. So it's a totally different situation with the offensive line. And so it's tough because each individual has to hold up for a play to work right. It just takes one guy to get beat and it blows up the entire thing. So with the offensive line, I guess I feel the same I did after last year, if not a little worse, only because I was not impressed with what they did in the spring game at all. I know our defensive line's pretty good, but maybe it's just me. I just wasn't I wasn't particularly impressed. And I just need to see more from this group in terms of consistency. That's a big thing with this offensive line. It's hard for me to, they weren't bad last year. Obviously, you can't go 12-0 and be a bad offensive line. They lost their leader early in the year. It's hard to recover from that, losing Bars. But the consistency is what makes me nervous with this offensive line. And what I mean by that is, yeah, they were good enough to win 12 games. I'm not going to say that's not good. You can't do better than being good enough to win 12 games. I know that. But games like Pitt stick out to me, where I felt like we were stalemated at the line or moving backwards the entire game. We made enough plays to win just because there's more raw talent on the roster than Pitt has. But we couldn't run the ball and we were getting caved in backwards against Pitt. Can't have that. You can't have that. The next step of this offensive line needs to be consistency. I got to see a more consistent effort across the board to where we don't run into these games where we just can't do anything. It's just so frustrating and there's really no reason for it. So that's what I need to see, more consistency from the whole group. I will say this, I don't think we've been close to seeing how good Liam Eichenberg can be. I kind of expected more from him at this point. So I truly hope he continues to improve. I don't think we've come close to seeing him reach his potential, which is a good thing in some ways, because that means there's still, you know, places to grow and places to go with him. You know, and then Aaron Banks, I think, is pretty damn solid. I like what I've seen from that kid. I like the way he works. I like his mobility. I'm fine with him. The big thing that did come up was Patterson winning that job over Trevor Rulin. And so that's like a senior and then a guy a couple years younger winning that job. So the staff obviously must have seen enough to be very confident in that move. So, I mean, we're just going to trust him and go along with that. And then you have Kramer and Hainsey. And again, I do like what I see from Hainsey. But Kramer and Eichenberg, I want more from. I just do. Those guys were built up so much as recruits. I got to see them step up a little more, and I hope they do. And in some ways, I think they will. You know, most of this offensive line's been together. They're coming back. And again, this is one of those things where I just see no reason. I see no reason why just them being around another year together, they shouldn't improve. Like, that just seems logical to me that they would just keep getting better as a group. And so, but that's the big thing I'm looking for from that line this year is more consistency, not having these weeks where nothing can get done and we're going backwards. You just can't have that. I need more consistency there and more reliability. And you know, here's the other big thing. I mean, this is obvious to say, but I need them to step up and play their best when we are playing our best opponents. Like, I mean, I know that's a shock to say, right? But I need them to play their best when we're playing the best. And so, no, that doesn't mean allowing Book to get sacked six times against Clemson. I know their defensive front's great and they all got drafted in the first round. I know that. But you should never give up a handful of sacks. I don't care what anybody tells me. You just shouldn't. It should never happen. So I have to see them consistency and efficiency across the board. And I need to see them step up and get serious when it matters most against the best opponents. Again, circling you, Georgia. That's when I need to see it. I am no longer impressed and never really was impressed with, oh my God, we ran for 450 yards. Oh, who is it against? Miami, Ohio. Who gives a shit? Tell me what you did against Miami, Florida. That same year, everybody was bragging about 400 yards rushing against Miami, Ohio. You went to Miami, Florida and got your brains beat in. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Come on. Come on. I got to see more from that group. Okay, so moving into the defense and the defensive side of the ball, here's the deal. There's no question Notre Dame's loaded at defensive end. Let's just start right there. It is super rare and awesome to be able to look at this depth chart and just see these guys where I think you could roll out four of them or five of them, and I'll still feel pretty damn good. Obviously, you have Julian Okwara and Khalid Kareem. Here's the only thing that makes me, I mean, those guys are the studs. But here's what makes me nervous about this. When your best defensive players are defensive ends, I feel like there's some staffs around the country that are going to be smart enough to be able to neutralize those guys by running away from them. Like if they're coming off the ends, running up the middle, and then they can't affect the play if you do it fast enough. Or fast pass, you know, oh, these guys are going to get after the quarterback. Well, you know what I would do then? Throw a really quick slant pass over the middle, trying to confuse our young, inexperienced linebackers. Boom, defensive ends couldn't get there to affect the play. So that's what concerns me with our strengths being defensive ends is, yeah, if a guy has to drop back on third and 12, they're going to have a chance to get there. I'm worried about these earlier downs when people are on schedule and they'll try and neutralize these defensive ends by running away from them right up the middle, which I think could be our weakness, or intermediate over the middle to those linebackers, which are a weakness. If not a weakness, at least a question mark. And we'll get to them. But if not a weakness, for sure, a definite question mark. And so that's the only thing that concerns me. If it's third and 12 and a team's got to throw, these guys are going to eat. That dog's going to hunt. I'm worried about those earlier situations where teams can kind of try and mitigate that and eliminate that threat. But so obviously you have those guys, Dalen Hayes, you have Justin Adamola, which I've liked a lot of what I've seen from him. And then you have Ugandeji on the other side behind Kareem. Like that is just, I don't remember in my lifetime looking at a Notre Dame defensive end depth chart and feeling this good about it. So that's awesome. I love where they're at. They're gonna hunt whenever they get a chance. Okay. Now, inside, I think overall with this group, I do feel a little better than I did after the season ended. I mean, you knew losing Jerry Tillery was going to hurt. There's just no way it's not going to hurt. And so it would have been really nice if there was a guy behind Jerry Tillery with that body type that was like a junior that could step in there and clog up the middle this year, and we just don't have it. And so I think that, you know, if you wanted to tell me that you feel pretty good about Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa, Jason Adamola at the defensive tackle positions, I could get behind that. I could feel pretty good about that. But there's no way for me to not say that at the nose, Heinisch and Lacy as the 1-2 there, that scares the crap out of me. That scares the crap out of me. Heinisch better take a major step forward. He gets pushed around and turned around a little too much for me to trust him to clog up the middle against Georgia running the ball. So then you look behind that and you have Jacob Lacy, who's a freshman. Okay, so, and I don't see any of these guys at 320 pounds clogging up the middle. You're looking at under 300 pounds last I looked. And so that's a major concern to me. That middle interior, I'm just worried if they can hold up or not. And what good are your great defensive ends if they're going to be able to hand off the ball and run it right up the middle and they can't even press or push the pile over to affect it or get home in time? So I could get behind that D tackle, MTA and Jason Adam. I could maybe live with that. But this Heinisch Lacy situation, it makes me very, very nervous. Now, maybe it'll be okay and I will be pleasantly surprised. But until I see it, question marks in football are negatives to me. Question marks are not neutral. If I don't know that I can count on you in a positive way, you are a question mark, and that to me is a negative until you prove otherwise. And so that nose spot is a major concern to me, and it's our weak point up front. And so we're just going to have to see how they hold up, but it just makes me really, really nervous. And I just don't want that to minimize the damage these defensive ends could do. So I guess overall, I feel a little bit better only because I'm gaining a little more confidence in MTA and Jason Adamola than I had before. And so because now I'm only looking at that Heinisch Lacy kind of spot as a big problem and not both that and the other D tackle spot with MTA. That's why I'm saying I feel a little bit better, because I know the DNs are good. And then don't even get me started with if there's an injury somewhere in there at those interior spots. So that's the other thing you have to think about. But I feel a little better about it, but I'm super nervous that teams are just going to minimize those DNs and eat us up front, especially Georgia. Okay, you knew we had to address this at some point, and so we're into the linebackers, and I'm terrified. I'm absolutely terrified. I'm just telling you honestly, I'm terrified. They're moving guys in and out. There's guys injured. Guys are switching positions. They're rotating. All spring, they were doing this. They're moving in and out. Some guys that were in the mix were hurt. And so that, here's the thing. You're about to realize how many mistakes and missteps Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil covered up with their instincts and how cerebral they are, how intuitive they are. I think we all took that for granted, and we might learn the hard way just how much ground they covered, how many mistakes they covered up because of those skills. Now, here's the thing you'll notice about the skill sets I just mentioned for Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil. Nowhere did I mention, oh, and they're really fast, or this guy's super muscular and all this stuff. He hits hard. I didn't mention any of that stuff. With linebackers, it's different. Linebackers, the best linebackers I've seen, have an instinct for the position. They are cerebral. They intuit where the ball's going to be and where they need to be. And not only that, but where their teammates need to be. They can do all that naturally. The best linebackers all did it. Ray Lewis did it. Brian Urlacher did it. Looking at Notre Dame, Jalen Smith could do it. Manti had that skill as a freshman. Manti Te'o had that skill as a freshman. He just knew how, where to be and when. It was innate to him. These are guys who were born with the linebacking gene. And I love the linebacking position. It's like a romantic position to me because there's so much more than just your physical attributes to being a great linebacker. There's so much more than just the physical part of it. And so that being said, that is my biggest concern with this linebacking group is, first off, where's the proven entity that I know I could trust to be the leader out there? I don't see one. So now I'm already concerned, okay? So that's a problem. But I didn't see anything through the spring or in the spring game that told me any of these guys really are totally comfortable, natural fits where they are and they're ready to play. I just don't see that ease and comfort that I saw from all the guys I mentioned that tells me these guys just get it and they can naturally intuit what's going on and where they need to get their guys in position and how to sense where the ball is going. And I don't see that from anybody in this group. And that really, really worries me. Now, sure, somebody could emerge, but there's nobody proven. So this is a huge question mark for me. And I think is the difference between one, two, or three losses, how these guys play and develop. And so here's what needs to happen. However you want to put them, wherever, middle, weak side, Rover, whatever you want to do, Bo Bauer, Drew White was injured, Asmar Bilal, I've been waiting for him to take a step like Coney did. It just hasn't happened. Heard good things about Jen Markeith, Jack Lamb, I hear good things about him. Shane Simon, Owusu Karmoah, Jack Kaiser, all these guys I've heard good stuff about. None of them are proven leaders and none of them are proven playmakers. Until I see that, I can't trust you and you're a liability in my eyes. Like I just explained, a question mark to me on a football team is not, it may be good, it may be bad. Question mark's bad until you prove it's good. I like to know I can count on my guys. We don't have that at this position. Now, yeah, they're plenty athletic, and they're going to be, I think, fast, but a little undersized. But more than any of that stuff, I am concerned about the natural inclination to play the position. That is such a huge thing with linebacking play. It's why it's one of my favorite positions to watch, because I love guys that have the natural gift to intuit where to be and where to put their other teammates. I love that about linebackers. So, and again, I keep going back to this. You end up in this position when you fail to recruit appropriately 3 or 4 years before it. Caleb Kelly's class, that's the class where they were in it for these good linebackers, didn't get any of them. And now he's making plays for Oklahoma. And we got a bunch of guys here, 3, 6, 9 guys that I've never seen make enough plays. I trust them. And none of them have a natural position. Or not enough of them for me to be comfortable with. So that's how you end up in this position. I'm how this group shakes out, I think, has a huge impact on whether this is a 11-1 season or a 4-loss season. I think it's that big of a deal, especially when you have a perceived weakness in the middle of the defensive line. And then you have a perceived weakness at the next level in the middle, which is these linebackers. That's my concern. And if I was another team, I would be attacking the middle of Notre Dame till they stop it. Right up the middle with the run and right over the middle with all these intermediate passes, try and confuse these young guys. That would be my game plan to attack the Notre Dame defense. If we could stop it, we're in business again this year. If we can't, this offense I got excited about, I'm going to need to be good because they're going to have to score 42 points to win a game. So I'm nervous about these linebackers. You might not be, but until I see it against good teams, I'm not trusting it. And I think there's going to be some problems there. What do I hope happens in the back of my mind? I hope a couple of these guys really do emerge and step up and take some leadership roles, and I end up feeling like we're in a better place than we're starting from right now. But nobody's there that I could trust with their play because I haven't seen them enough. And none of them are jumping out to me as having that natural inclination for the position. That terrifies me. I hope I'm wrong. They're a question mark for now. They could end up being exciting and fun. But early on, there could be some problems. That's one good thing about having Louisville and New Mexico before Georgia. We're going to get a chance to see these guys in action in games that we should win comfortably and hopefully be able to work some of this stuff out before going down to Athens. Because those linebackers are going to be a key part of that game. So I'm nervous. Makes me nervous. The secondary, here's the deal. You look at these corners, and when I look at the corners, like, okay, yeah, you have Troy Pride, okay, who I pretty much trust. And so you just can't have Troy Pride getting hurt is the one thing. And that other corner spot I'm nervous about. I just am. And so this is another position where I think teams are going to throw and they're going to try and test whoever that corner is opposite of Troy Pride. Listen, the secondary is one of those positions, kind of like offensive line, where you can never have enough guys. Like, recruit more of them. Like, you can never have enough players, and good players, not carcasses. I don't need cadaver bodies. I need players. You can never recruit enough corners, safeties, offensive linemen. Not bodies, dudes. Big difference. And we all got to see what happens when your best corner goes down in a major bowl game. We got totally roasted and it cost us the game. Okay, so forgive me that I'm concerned about that happening again. It's like, oh, well, we feel really good about Troy Pride. Well, what if he gets hurt? What are you going to do? Have Avery Davis out there who was trying to catch passes in the slot last year and now you're going to have him out there guarding USC's receivers? Good luck. You know, like, these are the things I worry about. So with your corners and with the safeties, like, yeah, I feel great about Aloe Gilman leading the safety crew. Hope he doesn't get hurt. You know, like, there's some top-level dudes here. And Aloe Gilman is, it still pisses me off that his waiver got denied for him leaving a military academy. But all these other people that just lose starting jobs get their waivers approved because they have good lawyers. Okay, the NCAA is just fraudulent. I feel good about that, but you just, and then Kyle Hamilton, he's not here yet, but it'd be really nice if he was, because I think he has a chance to play early with these safeties. It would have been really nice to have him, in the spring and rolling early, because I think he's the next best talent, raw talent. So how do I feel about the secondary? Okay, but it would have been really nice to have Julian Love back. I'd feel a hell of a lot better if I had him back instead of him waiting around and going to the fourth round to a dumpster fire Giants team. Wouldn't you rather just come back here for another year if you knew that was going to be your outcome? I mean, nothing against him. It's just how it worked out. But that's frustrating to me because I don't feel like it ended that great for him and we could really use him. You saw what it looks like when you lose that guy against Clemson. You saw it. It ain't pretty. And so the depth back there concerns me. You better hope everybody stays healthy and somebody else shows up at that other cornerback spot. I don't know if I could trust Houston Griffith. I think he's better at safety anyways, but he has to play corner because there is nobody. Tariq Bracey, I don't know. Sean Crawford, is he going to be healthy? I don't know. DJ Brown, I don't know. So there's just a lot of these, Jalen Elliott, okay, fine. But there's a lot of these, I don't know, once you get behind that top guy. And that makes me nervous. You can never have enough secondary players. So as long as all these top line guys stay healthy, like, I feel okay about it. But there's still weaknesses that if I was an opponent, I would target. There's clear weaknesses. And that makes me nervous. Rather than have Torrey Pride on one side and Julian Love on the other, then that's a pretty good force field there, okay? But the way it's setting up, I think that other corner spot is a weak point, that opposite Troy Pride that people are going to try and attack. And they're smart too. Notre Dame has to show they could stop it. And so I'm kind of so on that. The Julian Love thing really hurts. If you would have went in the first round or the second round to a decent team, I would have been like, fine, it was worth it. But fourth round and the Giants, who I think are maybe the one of the worst franchises there is going right now, that's a tough pill for me to swallow. It just is. I don't like it. Especially when I just look at what a difference he would make on this team. And okay, so the final part of this is special teams. Don't even get me started on coverage units and how bad they are and all those problems. But here's the problem I have. I have severe, major anxiety and questions about kicker, like kickoff kicker, punter, and place kicking and field goal kicking. I have major red flag questions about all those positions because I can't trust any of the guys who are doing any of those roles at all. Zero. No trust. No trust. I cannot trust Dorr to kick off. He's got more snap hooks than amateur hour at your local municipal golf course. Like I can't. And the punting, I'm just telling you, I'm this Jay Bramblett. I don't know if I could trust. Okay. And so I am incredibly nervous about this. I'm not even talking about coverages. I can't trust the punter. I can't trust kickoff guy. I can't trust field goal guy. Okay. That's a rough start, but I have no faith, no trust in any of them. They're all going to have to prove it on the fly. And what I've seen out of each of them so far, there's huge concerns with every one of them. And so you cannot lose you only have 12 football games in a year. You can't lose one because of stupid special teams. I say it every year. And here's what really upsets me. So special teams in general, huge concern, worried about all of it. Let's just throw that out there. Worried about all of it. Worried that we're going to have a decent punter. Worried to have a kickoff guy who can keep it in play. And worried about field goals. Till I see that it's okay, it's going to be a problem in my mind. And given the propensity for Notre Dame special teams to be bad, why should I expect different? They have to prove to me it's different. Until then, I'm going to expect the worst. But there was even talk about a walk-on kicker. I heard on one of the podcasts, a walk-on kicker getting a chance here. And so here's what I don't understand about special teams. You tell me, how is special teams specialist recruiting not the easiest thing to recruit in college football? And the reason I say that is you might have like some offensive lineman and his tape looks really good, but you realize he's playing in some crappy league where there's not a lot of talent and the guy's just 100 pounds bigger than the defensive lineman. So he's pushing him around because he's just in a bad public league in the middle of nowhere where they're not known for football. That is really hard to judge. How good is this player versus how bad is the competition? You don't have that with kickers. It just is what it is. The guy kicked how many 45 yarders? How many did he make? How many did he miss? That's black and white. There is no competition. It's just him. Did he make it or miss it? And how many times? With a punter, what is his average distance? That's not relying on anything else other than just seeing how far the guy punts. Doesn't matter on the competition or anything. And Notre Dame's sitting here and I'm listening to people say we might have a walk-on kicker. Like, this ain't Reggie Ho. And if it is Reggie Ho, I'm open to it, but it ain't gonna be. So I have no patience for bad special teams. I think it should be the easiest thing to recruit. Why Notre Dame can't go into some Catholic league and recruit all their offensive linemen and kickers. I don't understand. I will never understand it. It seems like they should be able to. So there's no excuse not to have a good kicker, no excuse not to have a good punter, and no excuse not to have a kickoff guy who doesn't hook it out of bounds half the time. But every year, Notre Dame plays a few really close games, and it's going to matter how these guys kick. And I'm hearing talk of anxiety, and it's in their heads, and you know, with these kickoffs, and once it gets in your head that you had a couple back, I can't have that from my kickers. They cannot be head cases. I thought Notre Dame was supposed to have all these smart kids and stuff. They should be above these head games then. Like, I just can't have it. So the entire, all these kickers, I'm worried about them all. I don't trust them all. So if that means we go for it more on fourth downs, so be it. Because I trust Book more than I trust this place kicker. That's how I see it. So I'm terrified. And special teams, listen, I understand Brian Polian's a hell of a recruiter. Keep him on as director of recruiting and doing something else and let somebody else coach special teams. Because I am done with his unit being not good enough, quite frankly. So I don't know what we're going to get out of this, but I'm terrified. And there is not one trusted known in the whole group as far as kicking the ball. Huge concern. And if we lose a game because of it, I'm going to blow my top. Okay. So that covers our positions. It is now time for the always annoyed, the first, the inaugural, I can't say that word. The first edition of the always annoyed. I'm going to keep this really simple and really quick. Just something I don't understand socially. Now, I don't know if it's like this in your state or what state has what rules, but in Illinois, you have to explain to me how this makes any damn sense. This annoys the hell out of me. In Illinois, it is illegal to drive with a cell phone in your hand, whether texting or talking on the phone. You cannot have your cell phone in your hand. You get tickets. There are cops who write tickets for this all the time, and it's a safety hazard, okay? Fine. I can live with that. But then you have to explain to me how it's perfectly legal to drive around in your car or truck with a lit stick with fire on the end of it. And that's perfectly legal. You explain to me how I can't drive and talk on the phone, but the guy in front of me could drive with a cigarette, which is literally a stick that is on fire, and they could drive with it in front of me all they want, and that's not illegal. With the ash falling off that's still smoldering, you could drop it, light yourself on fire. Not to mention the people who flick their lit cigarette out and it goes right on your car. Or in the summer when it's real dry, I know people who flick cigarettes out, they land in some dry grass and light the whole thing on fire. How is that totally legal? But John gets a work phone call, I can't answer it, and I get a ticket. Explain to me that. I don't understand it. How could it be legal? How could that be legal? Next step to that is these people who drive smoking with their windows up with little kids in the back. How is that not a felony? You want to smoke? Go for it. But to endanger these little kids and expose them to it, I think that's child endangerment. How is it not? How is it not? So that's just one little tidbit, one little annoyance, something that I just don't understand that I always, it just annoys me whenever I see it take place. And so that's just very simply, that's my first always annoyed segment. I just, the logic to me, I don't understand between those things. I can't use my cell phone, but the other guy can have a lit stick of fire in his hand and mouth, and that's considered completely fine and safe. I don't understand. I don't like it. So that's my first segment, always annoyed. That's just something that's always bothered me. So that's going to be it for the show today. We went a little over an hour, which is fine. And so be expecting an announcement about the iTunes coming up soon. And also these last couple episodes are going to be start appearing on the Michigan Sports and Entertainment homepage as well. So we are getting things ramped up here. Thank you for joining me as always, and we'll talk to you next week.